Welcome to Faith and Freedom. We hope to inform, inspire, and encourage you to stand up for faith and freedom as we discuss victories and challenges in the courts, in public policy, and in the culture. Faith and Freedom is brought to you by Liberty Counsel, a litigation, education, and policy organization. Join us now as we address the latest cultural issues across America and around the world.
Big win for religious schools at the U.S. Supreme Court. I am Matt Staver, founder and chairman of Liberty Counsel. We're going to be talking about this on Faith and Freedom with Holly Mead. Well, again, we have another 7-2 victory at the United States Supreme Court. This time it's on behalf of faith-based schools and their First Amendment right to free exercise of religion to make employment decisions regarding their staff, in this case teachers, without government interference. It involved two Catholic schools. Both argued before the U.S. Supreme Court. In both cases, we have two teachers at these two different Catholic schools, and they were required by their annual agreement and faculty handbook to adhere to and teach the doctrine and sacraments of the Catholic Church. In both cases, at their annual review, the teachers were not offered contract renewals. They filed discrimination claims in federal court against their former employers. The case ultimately went up to the United States Supreme Court, and the High Court ruled 7-2 that both schools were protected religious organizations and that the courts could not interfere with their employment decisions under what's called the ministerial exception that protects the autonomy of houses of worship and religious employers. Holly, this is a very good decision, and it continues to expand on this what's called ministerial exception, which we'll talk about in a moment.
Absolutely. I mean, you had two teachers, and there were performance issues is why their contracts were not renewed, you know, but it's a good win for these religious schools. So the government cannot interfere and say, yes, you have to keep these people on the roll. You know, you had two Catholic schools, as you stated. One teacher who was at a school from kindergarten to eighth grade, and she brought a claim against the school under the Age Discrimination in Employment Act. And then the other one was a fifth grade full-time teacher at a Catholic school, and she did the same. And both of them, their performance declined. And, you know, even though they had had counseling, that kind of thing with their administrator, their performance declined. So they eventually were not renewed in their contracts.
Yeah. And when they originally agreed to teach, and also in their employment handbook, it specifically says that they are required to adhere to and teach the doctrine and sacraments of the Catholic Church. Mm-hmm. So in these particular situations, they actually did that. There is no indication in the order from the Supreme Court that they necessarily deviated from the doctrine of the Catholic Church.
But they were teachers, not ministers.
Right, they were teachers. What it appears to be is that they made the decision to terminate them based upon performance.
Right.
That they weren't doing their performance across the board to the level that the Catholic schools wanted them to achieve. So they didn't renew their annual contract for the next year. And so they both filed suit. Like you said, they did these claims under the Age Discrimination and Employment Act. Oh, you discriminated me because I'm a certain age. That's why you don't want me. Well, the Catholic organizations defended by saying, we have a religious freedom right and autonomy to be able to make the employment decisions as we desire. And courts have no authority to interfere. Well, the U.S. Court of Appeals for the Ninth Circuit, the one that governs out in California, of course, it ultimately did not grant the ruling on behalf of the schools. It ruled against them. And so that's one of the most, or has historically been one of the most reversed courts in the country. So this case goes to the U.S. Supreme Court. And let's go back a little bit. What is this ministerial exception? First of all, it's really the First Amendment. The First Amendment doesn't say anything about ministers. It just says about religious free exercise, that the government can't interfere with the free exercise of religion, and it can't establish a religion. So the very first case that ever came to the Supreme Court, one of the early ones where this ministerial exception was coined by the court, was a case involving a minister, a pastor. that was a case involving somebody who would be like a preaching pastor, like your senior pastor, if you will. And the religious organization or the church, I believe in that case, ultimately let that person go. Well, the pastor ultimately filed suit. The case ultimately went to the U.S. Supreme Court, and they said, no, the First Amendment would require a ministerial exception. In other words, they can terminate the pastor because that's very clear. The church, if we were to force the church to second guess its decision, override its decision, we, the court, the government, would be interfering with the autonomy of the mission of that church organization, that religious body. So that's how it got the word ministerial exception. Mm-hmm. Hosanna Tabor was a case a few years ago, and there had been other cases from that original case up until Hosanna Tabor. Hosanna Tabor was a 9-0 decision, interesting.
Wow.
9-0.
I haven't heard of that before.
Even you had all the liberal justices signing on, 9-0, which is very interesting, Holly, because the Obama administration was on the other side. President Obama, the Attorney General under Obama, they took the position that you should never have a ministerial exception. So in that case, it also involved a school, and it involved a teacher. The difference between that teacher and this teacher is that particular religious organization had a process for that teacher to be commissioned as a minister. So that teacher ultimately was eventually commissioned as a minister, and so that teacher had the title of minister, but was teaching in a classroom. Wasn't a minister like a preaching pulpit minister, but was a minister in a school, but the job assignment was teaching in a classroom, like these teachers. 9-0, ministerial exception. This case went a little bit further. These teachers teach in a school, like Hosanna Tabor, but they're not ministers, and they're not classified as ministers, and they're not required to take all this other religious history or other kind of specific training. They did not have any religious credential, training, or ministerial background, but they're teachers. And so the question was, do they fall under the ministerial exception? And the Supreme Court said yes. And they said that it is not the title of minister that is important. It's the function of the job that's important. And in this particular case, these teachers actually are communicating doctrine and beliefs of the religious organization.
Right. I appreciate what Alito wrote in this. He said, you know, it is what an employee does that is at the bottom line. Judicial review of the way in which religious schools discharge those responsibilities would undermine the independence of religious institutions in a way that the First Amendment does not tolerate.
Exactly. And so he wrote the majority opinion, and he says, the First Amendment protects the right of religious institutions to decide for themselves, free from state interference, matters of church government, as well as those of faith and doctrine. And the court also says, although these teachers were not given the title of minister and have less religious training than the teacher in Hosanna Tabor, an earlier case involving the ministerial exception, we hold that these cases, or their cases, fall within the same rule that dictated our decision in Hosanna Tabor. The religious education and formation of students is the very reason for the existence of most private religious schools, and therefore the selection and supervision of the teachers upon whom the schools rely to do this lie at the core of their mission. So it's a very good decision in that respect. Now, does it apply only to teachers? It clearly applies to teachers at a church or religious school, no question about that, or some other teacher in a religious organization. It doesn't have to be a school or a church, but if they are communicating the doctrine and the message and the mission of the organization, it certainly applies to them. How far out does it apply? Well, you have to think through all the different employees, because does it apply, for example, to a receptionist? Well, there's no particular case on that. Mm-hmm. But when you think about it, that receptionist, dependent upon the situation, may need to also be the voice of communication to the people that that receptionist greets. For many people, that might be the only time they communicate with the religious organization. It's certainly the first time that they would communicate with the religious organization, so you'd want somebody very consistent with your doctrine. And what happens if somebody has a question? What happens if somebody needs counseling? So you have to look through all the different kinds of areas of job duty, and the more that they are the mouthpiece, the communication vehicle of your doctrine and mission, the more they would fall under the ministerial exception under the First Amendment. Now, in addition to that, there's other religious freedom laws as well that could be available. This is a great win. For more information, visit Liberty Counsel's website, lc.org.
You've been listening to Faith and Freedom, brought to you by Liberty Counsel. We hope that we have motivated you to stand up for your faith, family, and freedom. Get informed and get involved today. Visit Liberty Counsel's website at lc.org. Call us at 407-875-1776.